partner, Alexander Fulmer.
I'm waving. We're also recording this, so the people...
We're clapping.
Yeah, they're clapping. There, yeah. You're clapping, too. I like this. It's nice.
You guys are going to be on the internet.
Yes. We run a local podcast here in Winston called the Name Redacted Podcast. Just for everybody to know, if you do have kids, don't let them listen to it. It is not appropriate for children. But today we are going to be running panels. We are friends with Ryan from Burke Street Comics, and we are here to help him out and get panels underway. We're going to let our guests introduce themselves and tell you a little bit about themselves, starting to my left with Fester.
So I'm Fester Faceplant, publisher by accident.
I guess we'll find out about that.
So, we'll get into that.
Yeah, we'll get into that.
And to his left.
I'm Michael Urey, and I am the editor-in-chief of Back Issue Magazine, which looks at comics from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And I have had I'm a Concord native, and I've had a 20-some-odd year history of being an editor or writer at a lot of different comic book companies.
Almost had him. All right, just so you guys know, we are going to do this in a very casual way. We're going to open it up with a few questions from us to them, and then we'll open it up to you guys after we get a little bit going. Basically, what we're going to do is we'll actually start considering Fester gave us a very, very intriguing intro. We'll ask him originally, how do you mean by accident?
Well, you know, 30 years of playing music. I mean, that's what I do. I'm a musician. And I run a little record label, a little punk rock record label. And just on a whim, there's no Charlton comic Facebook groups. So I'm like, I'm all about the Charlton comics. Always have been, from the last 40 years, And so I started one. I figured, hey, it's going to be me and 15, 20 other people. Who the hell remembers Charlton Comics? So
I've only heard it in whispers and back alleys.
Exactly.
The thing of legends.
That's exactly right. And Sleeping with the Fishes. So I start the group, and on a whim, I'm like, hey, let's make a comic book or a zine. And a bunch of pros jumped in. Paul Kupperberg was the first. He's like, I'll do it. So just from that, it's like, well, I guess now I'm committed to it. So... boom, here you go. We got the Charlton Arrow first issue coming out, now.
That's awesome. That's great.
First printing's already sold out, so.
Now, nice. Do you think that would have been possible, the same thing would have happened 20 years ago without the advent of social media?
Absolutely not.
Yeah?
Absolutely not. The whole social media thing has changed the entire spectrum of how you can and how you will release your publications. Before, you literally had to be able to network physically or on the telephone, but even then you had to find someone who had that number. Now it's just a click of a button, boom. Hey, what are you doing? I've got this project coming up. How do you feel about it? Instantly, like that. And then just exponentially everything radiates out from there. You cannot do what I'm doing, and probably not really what you're doing.
No, I couldn't imagine not having the internet. I started as an editor, an assistant editor originally at a company called Comico, the comic company, in Norristown, Pennsylvania. I'm from Concord, so I left my home to go track down a comics career in the 80s. Back then in Norristown, let's say we were publishing things like Robotech, The Elementals, that Bill Willingham was writing and drawing. He's been doing Fables for Vertigo DC for years now. But we would send out type to the local typesetter for our letters pages. They would come back in these big galleys that would physically be glued onto artboard. And almost all artists, for most of my career as an editor, worked still the traditional way of drawing on the 11 by 17 artboard, and that size Bristol board, and everything was sent originally by the mail or delivered to the offices. I went from Comico to DC Comics in 89, and still we had a huge FedEx account because all the art would come in and out of FedEx. There was still no internet. And so you would call the artist on the phone. As an editor, a lot of them lived close to the New York area to get work. So my new friend Patrick here was asking me earlier about, you know, how to get work as a writer. And, well, back in those days, writers and artists, pretty much if they wanted to work regularly, they lived around or in New York City, because that's where the work happened. If you wonder why, historically, all the long-running superheroes are white, the truth is, they were created by middle-aged, or in a few cases, young, Jewish or Italian men who mostly lived in and around the New York area, which is where the publishing area happened. It was later that through the advent of other types of developing media, and now social media, that allows the world of comics and superheroes to look more like the real world, where all types of people are characters, and they're creating characters. But back in the day, for the longest time, up until the past 15 or so years, it still was largely, you know, what I said earlier, and these old romance comics that were made for girls in the past, they were, from the 40s through the 70s mostly, they had romance comics, which had beauty tips and stuff for young girls. They were made for girls. They were written by middle-aged Jewish and Italian white guys in New York City. And a lot of them were kind of a response to women's liberation, and women's liberation really kind of happened in the World War II. When the men went off to the war, the women were left behind. They played professional baseball. They worked in the factory. So when the men came back, get you gals back in the kitchen, and so these and making babies where you're supposed to be, technically, and according to the old thinking, and those comics kind of had those virtues. If a woman had a flirtatious background, or she wanted to be a professional, the comics would always teach them, and those old romance comics, they're better off to find that man who will take care of you.
See, that actually it actually brings up a good point that you guys said with this, because the advent of social media, such as, you know, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that, it's clearly a propellant for people to be able to show the world as it really is. And there are actually two characters from two different times, one from DC and one from Marvel, that I think that you guys could probably weigh in on this in terms of how one of these characters has changed and how the other one was probably created through the fact that social media started to exist the way it is. The first one is Wonder Woman. A lot of people don't know this, but Wonder Woman was actually created by a sex therapist, a male sex therapist who thought that there wasn't a strong female presence in comic books, and he wanted to make a strong female presence in comic books, so he made Wonder Woman. And she's changed a ton throughout the years, and she's become a totally different character now. And the second character is the new Spider-Man, Miles Morales, who is a, if I'm not mistaken, a mixed Puerto Rican and black gay superhero, which is something that I have never seen before, clearly. So I was just wondering, do you guys see, like, coming from the fact that you guys do what you do and you use the social media that's available to you through the internet now, do you see the changes in Wonder Woman and the advent of Miles Morales and things like that as being really pushed on and propelled through the social media? Bester?
You know, I really can't comment on that. I don't read the new things coming out from the major companies. They lost me a long time ago.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not trying to slag the major companies, but they forgot what they were all about, and which was telling a fun story.
Yeah.
You know? And a self-contained story. Yeah. I don't need 17 issues to tell what could be told in a single issue. You know, I don't need 30 pages of a fight scene.
Yeah.
You know?
I could probably jump in on that, though, about social media. I think that most of the readership today, the audience today, takes it for granted. Because that's the world we live in.
Yeah.
And, I mean, historically, if you go back, I can remember as a kid in the 70s when Luke Cage was Hero for Hire came out in the early 70s. Well, this basically, he was a superhero equivalent of a what they would call back then a blaxploitation movie character, Shaft. And if you look at the movie poster for Shaft and the first cover to Hero for Hire, that's what they were doing. They were making Shaft as a superhero. And that was big news, because at that point there had not been a superhero of color who had actually had his own magazine.
Yeah.
Yep. So that was news. That was groundbreaking. That was history. And so with each passing generation, that it becomes significant from a historical footnote, but you don't think about it anymore.
Yep.
And I think that's cool that we don't have to think about it
right.
anymore.
It's just sort of an accepted given
that's
at
true.
This point.
That's true. But I'm also old enough now to know that I can look back. And I'm a historian in my hometown of Concord, and so one of the things that I've taught kids who come to our local museum about is school integration. Ooh. I mean, this is something I went through as a small child in the 60s. When I was started in elementary school, I bet you too, if you grew up here in the South, your school was a white school, and then in another part of town there was a black school. And essentially the races were segregated. There were certain places where you would cross paths. But I show kids pictures of this, not to freak anybody out, but just to let them know that there have been changes and that people went through, in many cases, hardships to create this world that we have today that we can't easily take for granted through social media. But I think it's absolutely cool that we do have these characters who really represent the totality of what the world is rather than still kind of a narrow view of it.
Yeah. Now, as publishers, do you guys feel a certain accountability to your readers now that they're so much closer with social media? Like, if you put out something in back issue that's wrong, you're immediately going to have 800 guys on Facebook calling you an idiot.
Because they're allowed to do that now.
It's not like the letters pages anymore where you'd have to wait a month and a half, 2 months to see your letter answered and recognized. How much does that take part in your decision as publishers to publish what you do?
We always want to try to make sure we set the record straight because we're looking at history
right.
in back issue. And so if you get something wrong, then we do our best to correct it and apologize. And I mean, nobody's setting out to report something incorrectly.
Right.
You know, and there's another social media tie-in here too. Like recently I had an article that was submitted to me, and I'm not going to mention what it was because I don't want to embarrass the person involved, but it had some information that I read this and I said, you know, this is not the full story. This is part of the story. It was a history of a long-running character. And I'm just curious. So I went to Wikipedia to see what the entry was, and it was that. Now, it was not plagiarized. It did not. Plagiarizing is when you take somebody else's words and you pass them off as yours.
Right. So it's not verbatim. It's just summarized.
That way, okay. He summarized what he, and in his own words, what he read there. And again, it was like,
so it was a term.
Instead of this was the story that needed to be told, he told that.
Yeah, gotcha.
And so I kind of called him on it, and then had to, I ended up rewriting a lot of that myself. And so that's where social media worked against me.
Yeah. And that's also a downfall of the internet age, is that people, there's so much information at your fingertips, but everyone wants something so instantaneously that they only look at the tiniest slice to go for their research, when there's infinitely so much more out there. You know, I mean, you can go to Wikipedia if you want to, but just remember, that's user-edited and user-contributed, and a lot of the times, it's wrong.
Yeah.
You know, it is wrong, completely straight up wrong. Check your facts before you want to submit anything. You know, check, double check. Go to the source. Go straight to the source. This is the internet age. This is the social media age. If you want to, if someone that you know wrote a certain story and you know they're on Facebook, send them a message. Yeah. Chances are they're going to get back to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're going to verify it or say, nope, this is not how it happened. This is how it happened. You know, and you can do that. That is the beauty of the internet age.
And so, the funny thing is, I found too that I'm sorry. No. A lot of times when you start to ask people this, you'll get more than one story because people will remember things differently.
Exactly.
And especially the farther it goes back. Or the further it goes back, and the older the person is you're talking to. And sometimes people will tend to remember what they did and amplify what they did, or they'll spin it in a certain direction. Sometimes, you know, when we're dealing with stuff like this, or I've written books about Superman and Batman's history where I've interviewed people who are in their 80s.
Yep.
And you know, well, oftentimes what happens is you start to have memory failure. And I never treat anybody with any disrespect. If I had one person tell me this and another person tell me that, I would actually print both
and let the reader decide.
And oftentimes there's truth in both sides, but I've noticed let's look at things differently.
I've noticed that too, because I listened to Fat Man on Batman quite a bit with Kevin Smith, and he had Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams on, and they would tell the stories about the same time period, and I'm like, these guys are in their 70s, and I'm getting two different stories about Julie Kazner, and I want to know which one's right.
Well, I think a big point to bring out in this is just knowledge itself, the definition of knowledge, just as a sweeping thing, is quantified as a biased account of an event based on one person's view of it. Because basically, if two people are watching a car accident from two opposite sides of the road, one guy can see it one way, the other person can see it another way. They're both right because they both saw it, but maybe the guy on the right side of the road didn't see the squirrel.
Yeah. The grassy knoll.
Yeah. So, and that's, I think, something that should definitely be looked at from the perspective of internet age, because you can't really just go on and say, okay, well, this guy tells it this way, so I'm going to buy this story. And it is a double-edged sword, basically, as Fester was saying, which is you have the crap with Wikipedia where you can't really trust it, but then it is the internet age, so if you want to send somebody an email or a Facebook message and be like, yo, you know more about this than Wikipedia, why don't you tell me personally what that's all about?
If I have a question about DC continuity, I'm going to message you rather than go, you know what I mean, to Wikipedia. If I have a question about Charlotte Comics, I'm going to talk to you instead of going, and I think that's what's cool about social media is it's made our community a lot smaller. Yep. We're a huge community of nerds, geeks, and comic book fans, but the interactivity between creators, content creators, and content consumers is a lot smaller.
And you know, this is like one of the few venues where you can really find that.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, where can you go? Okay. You can go meet Neil Adams, who was the Batman artist of the 70s, and have a conversation with him. Are you going to meet Mick Jagger and sit down and talk with him for a few minutes? No.
No.
You're not. Are you going to have
I'd like to think I am.
I am Mick Jagger.
There you go. No, just to bring this back around, since you guys are, I don't know how, you're self-publishers, correct? You guys publish and edit and art?
I'm self-employed.
Self-employed.
But I'm not the actual publisher. I work with different publishers for different
What was the, you know, with Fester, you saw one day online that your troubling group had just exploded. What made you guys just finally just pull the trigger and say, there's enough interest, let's go ahead and publish?
It was literally a single comment from Paul Kupperberg. Mm-hmm. He said, you know what? I'm in. You know, I'm in. I'll do this. You know, I'm in. There's a story I want to tell that never got to be told. I basically want to give my big fuck you to DC and the Watchmen. And I want to. There's a story I want to tell, and it's in this first issue, and I was like, okay, we'll run with it from there, and from there it was like he's like, all right, let me call up John Byrne, see if I can get him to do something, you know, Roger McKenzie, who you know, legendary guy, and he hadn't written a comic book story in 23 years, you know, he was just so fed up with the industry, he's like, I'm out. And he's like, Kupperberg's in, I'm in, you know?
Wow.
He's like, I'm in, this is something that should be done, you know? And, you know, this is his first story in 23 years. You know, I mean, this is a guy who, like, got so fed up with being mistreated, you know, by certain people at certain companies. But, you know, I mean, a lot of things can be said about Frank Miller, and he's a great storyteller, but the truth of the matter is, you know, McKenzie got booted because Miller got himself an ego, you know, and he's just like, I'm done. Now he's back, and that's another reason. There's all of these people who, Steve Skeets, you know, legendary writer, working in a grocery store right now. Working in a grocery store. He, you know, he's come back and he's writing some stories for us. His new story is in the second issue. I mean, this is a guy working in a grocery store. This is a guy who wrote, you know, how many?
Aquaman.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, but he literally works in a grocery store.
Yeah.
And to have these people coming out of the woodwork, you know, we got, you know, Burchett coming up in a few issues.
geez, Nick Cuddy and Joe Staton are bringing back E-Man for us. So it's an amazing, and that's why we're doing it. That's why we're doing it, to get these people back out there doing what they love to do. And if I didn't love the stories and the art and the characters, I wouldn't do it. Yep. It's not like I'm making any money on it.
Right.
You know? So
it's just something you feel.
And no one's getting, that's the whole thing. No one is getting paid from this. Not the creators, not the artists, not the writers, not the editors. None of us are getting paid on this. You know, we're all doing it because,
well, you feel it needs to be done.
Absolutely. So, and hopefully we're doing something worth reading.
Yeah.
So I think we are.
Like,
what was the question?
Why do you do what you do?
What made you wake up one day? Because you're a historian by trade.
I'm a historian just by age. Because I haven't aged out of reading comics. Yeah, because I started my fascination when I was around, you know, your age. And I was, you.
Yeah, Batman.
And I was a little younger than you. But, my life was changed on January 12th, 1966, when I was a small boy, and Adam West as Batman came on television. And it was an epiphanal moment, because I just thought that was the coolest thing in the world. And my parents were laughing so hard they were about to fall out of the chair. And I got mad at them because I didn't find the humor in, you know, I mean, Batman was dancing the Batusi with Jill St. John, but I just thought that was kind of cool because everybody danced. That was the 60s. That's what they did, you know, go-go dancing. And it just made sense to me, but my parents thought it was funny.
It's still the coolest
thing. This is still the coolest
it's
thing.
It's the know? Best Batman.
It's a cool end. But I got sucked into comics at that age and just never left it. So over time, you sort of become a historian because you've continued to read comics and you haven't forgotten any of it. So that's how you become a historian.
Yeah.
But also you start to appreciate what people went through and what people did. And then what I find more fascinating is the stories behind the stories. I mean, what was going on in the popular culture and politics and the world behind the times when Steve Skeets was writing those Aquaman stories in the late 60s. Because some of them involved, the last issue of Aquaman was issue 56. He wrote it, Jim Aparo drew it. It was called The Creature That Devoured Detroit. And it basically was a pollution story where this, you know, pollution kind of took on a mind of its own and became a monster that was attacking Detroit. And so that was during the day of what you would call relevance, where people like him and Denny O'Neill, all these guys, they were hippies. They were absolute full-on, you know, full-tilt hippies. And they were taking social issues and making comic book stories out of it.
When Speedy became a heroin addict.
Well,
exactly.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the Justice League was, you know, fighting pollution.
Yeah.
And instead of supervillains. They would occasionally fight supervillains, don't get me wrong. But, so that's kind of what was going on in comics during that day. And that stuff started to shape my thinking, too, because when I was smaller, the heroes were teaching me virtues, but then they were teaching me that there is a bigger, social world out there during my intellectually formative years. Everything I learned comes from a comic book.
We're actually going to open it up to you guys. You've been waiting to ask questions.
Yeah. Well, like, it started with Wonder Woman because I know that the present series has been, like, praised for being very continuous and self-contained.
Yeah.
So I just thought that was interesting. But do you think, like, there's any hope for Wonder Woman becoming popular as Batman or Superman? Because, like, they're, like, big three, but Wonder Woman has so much different continuities. I was wondering if you thought there was any way for her to have a rebound.
You guys
never.
Have a...
not going to happen.
You know, Wonder Woman in comics has always had kind of a curious history because being a former DC editor, Wonder Woman was published for many years just to preserve the copyright. Mm-hmm. And when it really wasn't until probably... when George Perez rebooted Wonder Woman in 1986 after Crisis, that somebody really started to take the character seriously. Although I mean no disrespect to anybody who wrote or drew any of those earlier stories. I mean, there's this one really kind of funky stage of Wonder Woman in the late 60s, early 70s when she lost her superpowers. And she was like a women's right type.
Yeah.
And she had I Ching, her Asian kung fu blind, you know, companion, who would just be considered to be horribly racially offensive today. But nonetheless, he was sort of cutting edge of the time. And so she was, you know, she was kind of based upon, if you know, the 60s TV show The Avengers. Mm-hmm. Diana Rigg played Mrs. Peel on The Avengers, so she was a very forceful, but still feminine woman, very positive woman. And so Wonder Woman has had a hard time. I don't know. It just...
Sadly, it's still a boys' club.
Yeah, and I
think it'll be quite some time before any of that.
Although, you know, I'd kind of argue with that, Fester. I don't know. That up until maybe just the past couple of years. But, I mean, look, I mean, any comics convention, you're going to find more Harley Quinns than anybody else in cosplay.
Yes, I'm not really... I definitely agree with you.
Are you talking
about
creative people?
I'm talking about character-wise. Character-wise, it's a boys' club.
Yeah, that's true.
And the male heroes are always going to outsell and outperform the female characters, whether they're a better character or not. I mean, I personally think Wonder Woman is there's so much there to explore with that character that they still haven't gotten around to. And there's so much to be done with that. And like you said, you know, for years they just published it just to keep the copyright. They don't know what to do with it. And it just, you'll notice every couple of years there's a reboot of it. Well, maybe we should try this. And you got to stick with what you know. And when you find something that you're doing right and it boosts those sales, keep it going.
And let me throw the question back to you. I mean, what do you think was the best characterization of Wonder Woman that you have seen so far?
I haven't read a lot of her work, but I have read like Grant Morrison's Super Gods, where she's talking about the original run until the writer died, and I think now it's receiving good reviews. I read a few of those, and I want to read the Gail Simone runs. Those are the three that I think are probably best.
I feel, in terms of weighing in on this, I've had this conversation before, several times. I have a few female friends that read comics, and me and my male friends have talked about it as well. And we've always hit on one thing about it, and that is that we've never really felt like female characters have been explored to the best depth that they can get to. And it doesn't matter whether it's a male character or a male writer or a female writer writing them. I think that, well, at least what we kind of came to a conclusion with it is that it's just the fact that there's the stigma on it that makes it so hard for us to accept that it's good enough.
I still think a lot of people have that, oh, well, it's for girls kind of mentality about it. You know what I mean? But if you want to look at an example of a female-driven book that works and works well, Batwoman.
Yeah.
I mean, if they can take that creative team and somehow work it over to Wonder Woman, I think they'd have a 600,000 selling book, in my opinion.
I also think that another really, really well-developed and well-written female character, Hackslash. Incredibly well-written.
Yeah, Hackslash.
Just fantastic. And, you know, and it's things like that. It's really small, like, not super popular characters like Hackslash. They don't get the recognition they should to boost popularity with, you know, female heroes and like villainesses and things like that. Like, you don't get the pervasiveness that you do with male characters because, like they say, it is a boys' club. Mainly boys read comics. That's just how it's been.
At least trend-wise.
Yeah.
It's changing now.
And, you know, when you do see females reading comics and being at conventions, it's I'm not going to say most of them, but a decent number of them are cosplayers. And that's one thing that drives that is the fact that, and I've talked to a couple of my friends.
I don't have a problem with that.
I have no problem with it either. But I've talked to some of my friends about it, and I get these weird sexist remarks about, oh, they just want to play dress up. I'm like, what if they like comics, dude? Like, just be happy that they're reading comics. Don't be like, oh, they like to make costumes.
Well, I mean, also, let's, like, do you
know what? Guys
want to
play dress up, too.
Yes,
I do.
Yeah.
I don't have the body for it.
I dare any one of you to say you didn't put a towel around your neck when you were a kid and run around.
I did it yesterday, Fester.
Exactly.
And Fester's actually going to be appearing as Elektra at 3 o'clock this
morning. Yeah! Excited for that.
Let's move on. Does anybody else have any questions for our?
I'd like to add like a footnote to the Wonder Woman thing.
Yes, of course.
I think that a problem with Wonder Woman is she was really a product of her time. And some of the other superheroes have been more easily adapted to current times. Wonder Woman is, maybe she does appeal to female readers more than guys. I mean, I've rarely read Wonder Woman, but I have read like Batwoman. The fantasy the mythology behind her almost kind of evokes unicorns, almost, you know, and it's very little girl friendly, but they have tried to toughen her up by making her a warrior, which really is contrary to the fact that she really came here as an ambassador for peace, yep, from Paradise Island. So they don't really know what they want to do with the character, and so it's going to be curious to see in this Batman vs. Superman movie, which is, you know, DC's attempt, or Warner Brothers' attempt to really start to grow a franchise, because they just announced the Cyborgs in this. I mean,
I did not hear that.
Lobo. What? They cast Lobo already, which is ridiculous.
They are populating this with tons of characters.
Let's
so,
hope we're not
they're,
jumping
they're,
the
this,
shark.
This is the spinoff.
Cross our fingers.
But, you know, I'd like to still, as far as Wonder Woman, my favorite just for my age is Linda Carter, which is the TV Wonder Woman.
She's
was the one television show where fathers and daughters watch TV together religiously every week.
Yes.
And go figure that out.
I think the best representation of Wonder Woman I've seen was in Flashpoint.
I don't know if
you guys have read Flashpoint, but that representation of Wonder Woman, she was an actual person. She was strong, she was emotional, she loved, you know, it was just...
She loved, she hated, she laughed, she cried, she killed.
It just sucks because it was an alternate timeline. Yeah. They got destroyed.
But see, there you go again. I mean, you look at the character and you've got like 20 different interpretations that you can think of Wonder Woman, where even though Batman is Superman, other, you know, two of the big
have
three.
Billions of interpretations.
But still, at their core, they're still
the same guy.
The same kind of basic premise.
Superman is always a Boy Scout. Batman is always...
You package it a little differently for that, you know, generation being representative. But Wonder Woman is kind of schizophrenic.
You've really touched on a really, really key point. What is Wonder Woman's driving force?
Could that be the women's rights struggle, and that's why it's so fragmented? I mean, the Boy Scout anti-hero thing, you know, has always been something that men have to juggle with. But why is a woman?
We could do an entire panel on just this.
A small thing to add to this in terms of the newest interpretation of Wonder Woman, I have just recently started reading Justice League 3000, which basically, if those of you who are not familiar with it, what they've done is after 1,000 years from now, like all the Justice League heroes and all that have been killed out, there's 5 beings that rule the universe, and they killed all the metahumans. They're all dead. They're all gone. So what the premise is that a researcher took the DNA that they found from the old Justice League, they implanted it and basically duplicated it inside the bodies of regular hosts, but they didn't retain the memories of the people they represented. So Superman didn't have the Kents, so he's just all ego. Batman didn't have the loss of his parents, so he's like snarky and kind of a jerk. And, you know, Wonder Woman has an astounding representation. She doesn't have the interaction with Earth. She just has the warrior instinct. So she's all blood and guts. She is just like, where's something to kill? Is that? I'm killing it. And it's nuts to see Wonder Woman. Like, she is nothing but a killing machine. And that is a interpretation of Wonder Woman I have never seen. And I actually kind of love it.
Did Batman save the DNA?
It's not him.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, because I would have...
I don't know, man. I'm not that far. It's like 4 issues in. Don't jump the shark.
I'm always... That's not what jump the shark means.
I'm doing it anyway.
Does anybody else have a question for our guests?
Well, I just thought it was funny. It's a panel of men, and we've been talking about like women in comics. Like, we kind of have a bias.
Our one woman is asleep right now.
Oh, hi, Tanya.
Do you want to sit in on the panels? See, look at that. Tanya is one of our friends who's here. She's
awesome.
We're talking about Wonder Woman right now.
Oh, fantastic.
See?
We're the guys, and we're talking about,
we're
like,
just
diversity.
Talking about how, like, women in comics, and I was like, we have no women in
yeah.
this room.
I'm usually the only female in any of these panels.
Boom. We're good. Fantastic. But yeah, so you were saying?
Well, I just think it's been interesting, like, when you look at, like, when they rebooted, like, Starfire.
Yeah.
She basically lost all of her character dynamic and
yeah.
just became TNA. Like, that's all she was,
yeah.
like,
yeah.
TNA. And I just get blown away by that. And, like, what I worry about with, like, Wonder Woman and the Batman-Superman movie is that she's just going to be a character of who's going to sleep with her? Is it going to be Batman? Is it going to be Superman? Or it's going to be nobody. But they're still going to focus on the fact that she's making a choice. Like, that's what I fear happening.
And that's justified. That's perfectly justified.
What I really hope is that, like, Diana just shows up and just beats the brakes off of somebody.
Yeah.
Like, I think that would be awesome.
So you're thinking that the Trinity is really going to be a romantic
triangle.
Yeah, right.
And she doesn't choose any of them, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're still focusing on the fact that it's, oh, she's a woman. Clearly, she needs to sleep with some other superhero. And that's my fear of that movie, is that they're going to play to that.
You can't not focus on that. That's in her name.
Yeah.
You know? It's in her name. So.
It's. I think one of the big things that, as you said, with just having female characters turn into TNA, I think one of the reasons they do that is it'll get boys to subscribe to it and be like,
mm-hmm.
that girl's got like no clothes on.
I have
I'm
to be honest
that.
With you. If Jim Lee draws Catwoman, I'm buying that issue.
Yeah, like
I'm not. I'm just saying. Like that's just I'm a red-blooded American male. That's the truth. And I mean,
because you have
wrong.
To pander to both sides when you're doing that.
Man could be like the female equivalent. I don't know. I've never really got one
and
man.
That actually, that you brought that up, because there was a lot of complaining done about the way that Black Widow was represented in the poster for Avengers. All the boy characters standing face front. She's turned around, just butt out.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, what? And I saw the most amazing thing I've ever seen, which is an artist rendering of if they reversed it. She's standing face front, and all the boys are like... And it was just, it was gorgeous. It was so beautiful.
Really.
Loved it. It was fantastic. Anybody else have any questions for the panel guests or anything? Or are we going to open it up to the get to know you section? Yes?
Yes.
Cool.
No question?
Fantastic. So, guys, one thing that we kind of like to talk about on the show, we do a show that's basically almost all nerd crap. And we talk about the qualification of nerd. And we actually talked to Fester a little bit about this before we started doing the show today, or doing the panel, and that is, in terms of qualifications of nerd, how do you kind of see it in terms of, how do you give that qualification out? Like, what earns the title of nerd? Because to us, it is a earned title. It
like,
is
what's,
not
what's something somebody
thing.
Can say that you can just kind of go, you're a nerd?
In a good way.
In a good way. Like, I was telling Fester outside when I was rolling up, I was listening to Rush. And he just said, oh, God. I was like, yep, that's me. I'm the prog rock geek. That's
yep.
what I...
Well, I just said that because, well, I think they suck.
Yeah. You're entitled to your opinion.
And
yeah,
Colin right. just had an aneurysm from that.
I can appreciate
you know,
punk rock, too. It's fun.
I say that for fear of not getting another trunk beer later. But,
guys, we have trunk beer.
But I get it, and I understand why you would say, oh yeah, I'm the prog rock nerd. I mean, for on a technical basis, yeah, I mean, the chops are there.
Yeah.
The chops are there. I just don't find any emotion in it.
Yep.
So.
I mean, listening to Closer to the Heart, I get a little misty, but that's just...
I get a little misty because it just hurts my ears. But I mean, and
shots fired.
I say this as a punk rock musician for the last 30 years,
yeah.
You know, and I can take a lot of damage to my eardrums, but I mean, with nerds and it's certainly with music, you know, if you say, oh, you know, I just picked up whatever, I'm like, well, did you go to record store day and get it on vinyl? You know, or did you get on colored vinyl? You know, that's
you
there's
did.
I did.
You
did.
So did
like
I.
2 weeks ago.
So did I, because you know what? I will take it on vinyl over CD any day, and certainly as someone who runs a small record label, I will never charge for, and this is going way off target. I'll never charge for an MP3 file
ever. You want MP3s of my music or anything I've released on my labels, they're free because it's a digital file and digital is finite.
Yep.
You know, there's going to be something that's going to be coming along sometime, sooner or later, that's going to replace everything that you've got on your e-readers and on your iPods and on your pads and whatever else, but there's always a book and a page. There's always a physical thing that you can play. I mean, if I've
got
a record...
You can turn a crank and put a record on it.
Absolutely. But I want a physical copy. I don't want something that exists only as ones and zeros.
Yeah, I can appreciate that.
How's that for nerd talk?
Yeah.
Boom! Yeah.
The CD is red. Isn't it read by ones and zeros?
It is technically binary.
No idea.
But the only thing that totally kills that is the Sunflare EMP pulse that knocks out everything on Earth. Boom, how's that? Everybody getting that? That's coming. Be ready.
I've been reading a lot of Walking Dead novels. I'm freaked out. I am freaked out.
We're ready. Zombie survival guide. It's coming.
I'm just ready for the day where I'm at work and like I see zombies walking across the golf course. I'm just going to call my friends. It's going down. Let's get to the compound. Come on.
Bye.
Well, you know, as the oldest guy here at the table, it gets to be expensive as an aging nerd.
Yep.
You can no longer have your action figures just on top of the refrigerator like I used to, or on the coffee table and stuff. You have to invest $800 into a nice curio cabinet with lights at the top that locks on the side to keep little kids out from it, and to have your collectibles there on show. You can't just have a couple of pieces of art around the house. You have to mat and frame them, and it has to be an acid-free backing with a UV-coated glass. And it's going to cost a couple hundred dollars per piece of art. So that is the home that I have today. But instead of the posters that once peppered all the walls, now we have nicely framed pieces of art.
I have an Alex Ross Avengers print I won't even put on the wall. I just keep it nicely rolled in a tube, but when I want to look at it, take it out, look at it, put it right back.
I actually went to one of the frame shops the other day to get pricing on like some of the sketches that I've had done and all that stuff. And they were like, yeah, it's going to be like $200. I was like, I paid $30 for the sketch. Like, I'm not doing that. Are you nuts? And they're like, do you want it framed? I'm like, yeah, okay. Like, you just kind of cave and you're like, well, I do love this. And that's nerdy. To be able to go, you know what, I spent $30 on this, but if I want it to look nice on my wall, I'm going to have to spend 10 times this much to get
that's
it framed.
That's when you go, if I knew it was going to cost $200, I would have had him do a full cover recreation.
Exactly. Yeah. I've been like, take 6 years to do this.
I have a signed copy of The Story of You Know Who, One Shot, by Garth Ennis. It's in a shadow box. I didn't even slab it. I was just like, you just put that in a shadow box. It's got a little lock on the...
It's under lock and key. The only way I'm getting into that is like with a blowtorch.
Yeah, just,
no God. Way.
Now I just feel like a giant.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm in good company, though.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because one of the things that actually we were talking to Fester about this outside was anything that you're passionate about, you can qualify as a nerd. Guys who play fantasy football are football nerds. Whether or not they want to... subscribe to the title of nerd, if you spend that much damn time and energy doing research into that guy ran this many yards and this guy passes for this many yards and that guy's a great fullback. No. You're a D&D nerd.
Absolutely.
Shut up.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Just accept the fact that you're a nerd and, you know, get the $5 you got for winning the pool.
But you know what? Just the brand nerd is not going to get you beaten up anymore.
No, it's not.
We're running the world.
I mean,
yes.
You know, exactly.
We win.
Some of the people in this room, their grandfathers would read in the 50s Mad Magazine at night under the covers with a flashlight, because if your parents found that trash in their room, they'd get busted.
Yeah.
Be in trouble. But now, you know, we have, Big Bang Theory has legitimized people who love fantasy, who love comics, who love, you know, sci-fi, and there's just a host of other, you know, shows.
I mean, Doctor Who is a national phenomenon.
Yeah.
Like, an international phenomenon.
I told my dad I was into Doctor Who, and he was like,
What's that?
I watched Doctor Who on PBS in the 70s. Like, he was like, how do you not know Doctor Who? And I was like, it's awesome!
And just think, though, that dressing up as one of the character like that was, up until this past couple of years ago, the domain of children trick-or-treating.
Yes.
And that ain't the way it is anymore. No. Everybody can do it. And now the entire family's going.
There are Walmart shirts. Like, I have had friends of mine come into work wearing, like, Avengers and Cap shirts and stuff. Yep. And I'm like, where'd you get that? And in my brain, I'm like, you clearly got this at a comic shop. And they go, I bought a Walmart for like $5.50. I was like, right. Oh my God.
And just to say, to show how far it's gone, I've never seen the man in a superhero t-shirt, but we have a president of the United States who used to read Conan and Amazing Spider-Man comics.
He read Conan?
Yes.
Conan? Sorry, Conan is a TV.
Well, Conan, it's like Aquaman. What is it?
Yeah, that's true. It's not common.
This is something that I'm very, very passionate about because I love subscribing to the title of nerd, and it is something to be proud of now, and I can't stress enough how important it is to me, and I think it should be important to anybody at this con should honestly be pretty stoked about being called a nerd. Because in my opinion, that means you are passionate enough about something that people notice it.
Yeah.
And that's good, because you don't want to be the apathetic person. In fact, we have Cap sitting in the back right now.
What up, Cap?
Yeah.
Oh, well, it's Nick Fury. You know,
he's
Nick Fury.
He's Fury today. Okay.
He's Marvel Comics. He's Fury.
Yes.
He had a son named Marcus. Jackson. But what happened was that...
Clearly not a Marvel reader. I'm sorry.
What happened was, you know, he's in Afghanistan handling his business, Hydra attacks him, he's like, I'm not important. Turns out that back in World War II with the Harlem Commandos, Nick Fury and his mom had a friendship, and she thought it was best if he just had civilian life.
Yeah.
Turns out that he couldn't do that because Hydra found out that he was Nick's son.
I was going to say he had too much Fury blood in him.
Funny enough, the son had his eyes shot out, same eye as the dad. He was dying.
What a coincidence.
What are the odds? Yeah.
What are the odds of this?
It's like somebody wrote that.
Some blood, you know, which, you know, he had some of the, Terra Nick Fury had some of the diluted super soldier serum.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so now his son has it. Nick Fury retired. Now his son is Nick Fury Jr. has taken over S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Secret Avengers.
Yeah,
all right.
Not a Marvel reader. I was just like, oh, it's Luke Cage Cap, and then he's like, no, I'm wearing an eye patch.
You know, but I wanted to do something different.
Yes.
You know, so. Clear. So let me come in something, you know, more comfortable.
Yeah, there you go.
Huh? It's not the Oakers, no, because he does the leather coat and everything too. It's like the Marvel now Nick Fury, because now Nick Fury is off the grid now, and his son kind of has it.
Anybody else have any questions? Anything like that?
Anything? No? Yes.
How do you deal when it comes to social media with negativity and comments and stuff like that? Or even a sentimentality from some
sort of
trolls. Well, I don't know about these guys, but, and this goes back to the whole nerd culture thing. I've worn the badge of nerd proudly for 45 years. I've grown up my entire life being called whatever they want to call me. That is no skin off my back. It all rolls right off. You can say whatever you want to. Everyone's huge and giant on the internet. You know, at least you're not the guy who's smacking me in the face, you know, after high school for, you know, carrying around a couple of comic books. So they can say whatever they want to. I mean, it is a free country, and or so they say. But
you can talk shit, that's fine.
Right, whatever. And that is the one thing with social media is that, like you were saying, sometimes before you would have to wait, you know, for the letters to come in, and they would trickle in, and you go, oh, they really liked it. Oh, this guy didn't think so much of it. Now, boom, it's out there within minutes. Dude, you fucking suck. You know? Hey, thanks for telling me what you think.
Yeah.
You know? But, you know, that's only those guys' opinions, and that's really all they are, is opinions. And you gotta, if you're gonna publish, if you're gonna do anything and put it in the public eye, you've gotta be able to roll with the punches.
Yeah.
It's that simple. If you can't roll with the punches, you're in the wrong business.
Because when you're gonna get the nebbish, you know, pedantic guys that are just like, well, actually, an issue, blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, well, you're right, all right? You feel better, move on, you know?
Well, Back Issue has a pretty active Facebook group, and every now and then, you know, I can tell when somebody drops that bomb. Like a week ago, somebody posted, "Who do you think is the greatest living comic book artist?" I'm thinking, okay, I know I'm going to have to come step in on this one in another day. And I do. I let people say what they want to say, but every now and then I rein people in. Mm-hmm. Not because I want to not allow people to have their voice. I don't like it when somebody, I don't care if you disagree, you don't have to name call.
Yeah,
that's,
right.
That's when I start to get involved. If it degenerates to that stage,
it's not so much.
It's
not censorship.
Often, but I do have to every now. And
it's not censorship. It's curation.
Exactly. It is, and that's
it's diplomacy.
You're also a moderator. Yeah.
Well, somebody actually said, "Well, I will, you know, help you moderate the Back Issue Facebook." And I said, "No, you can't do that because I'm the editor of the magazine, so I am its curator."
Yeah.
And so the magazine stays positive in tone. We do deal with some, you know, volatile issues occasionally because people have disagreements that stem back. I mean, every now and then, we have a department called Greatest Stories Never Told, where we go dig up the stories behind the comics that were supposed to come out that never came out. Well, it turns out now you've got a 75-year-old guy who's been ticked off since 1969. And I'm going to tell you what so-and-so did, and it's good. And he goes on and on and on and on about that. And it's actually kind of fascinating, but you realize, man, we're just kind of like pouring salt in an open wound.
Right. That guy stole my Pokemon cards. And I don't like him anymore.
but I overall, though, I keep the tone of the magazine positive, and so I try to enforce that on the Facebook group, too. And it's only, again, I encourage the debates. I think they're interesting, but, you know, you don't have to call somebody an a-hole because they have a difference in opinion.
Yes,
absolutely. And also, when it's there, it's there. You know, I mean, it's permanent when you write it. It's just so easy to be ticked off and then type, hit send, and then... You know, would you want your mother to read that? You know, I don't know. I'm old enough to really, you know, my mom's not going to be around that much longer. I don't want to put my mom in the grave because I wrote on Facebook. So,
it's easier to look at it in retrospect and go, oh, I sounded like a dick. When you're doing it, you're like, I'm validated in this, and I'm right, and then you hit send, and 10 minutes later you look back and you're like, who wrote that? Oh, shit,
it's
that's
like
me.
Like the beer bong photos, they're never a good idea to have on the internet, because when you run for mayor 40 years later, somebody's going to see you.
Exactly.
There you go.
That's why, like, at house shows, we have a couple friends. We all go to concerts in Greensboro. We have friends that, like, take pictures at the shows, like, they're documenting. I'm like,
stop doing
it.
This.
I'm friends with my mom on Facebook.
This is Alex asleep on the couch with no pants. That one didn't go well.
No, it did not.
And we're stuck with that image too, which is disturbing.
This is not a leg man.
No, I got genitals on this guy's face. Let me put this on Facebook. Not fun.
LOL nerd. Does anybody else have any more questions? I think we're getting kind of close to wrapping it up.
Yeah.
We're almost at an hour. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you
to our guests.
We really appreciate you guys coming in and listening. And my confessor,
thank you guys
for sitting in.
Well,
this has been a lot of fun. We will put
plugs.
Yes, plugs. If you guys have plugs that you'd like to do for events you have coming up, this will be going on our site within the next 2 days.
Right. Okay, well, I'll plug Back Issue Magazine. Back Issue,
boom.
Two words. www.tomorrows.com. That would be TWOMORROWS.com. See how well I spell? This is how I became a writer and editor.
There you go.
There you go.
Spell check. No typewriter.
And the Charlton Arrow. You can find us at, the Charlton Arrow. Facebook. It's pretty simple. And if you want to order or whatever, it's morttodd.com/Charlton.
Two D's? Morttodd?
Two T's, two D's.
Cool. Two T's.
So once again, thank you guys for coming in and listening. Thank you guys for sitting down. If you guys would like to listen to our podcast, this will be up there, www.nameredactedpodcast.com.
We have a domain
We have an actual domain. We took a three-month break, and we were like, let's get back and do it professional style. And now we have actual email addresses that are our names at nameredactedpodcast.com.
Legit.
Indeed. And to our guests, if you guys are ever back in the area and you would like to be on the podcast just to be on it with us.
I live 20 minutes down the road.
Boom. Fantastic. Boom. Done and done.
Most of the time there's beer involved.
Yes.
So. Live 20 minutes down the road.
Don't worry. We stay lubricated. It's fine. So, thank you guys who are listening at home for tuning into this. We've had a blast on our first panel. This has been really
fantastic.
Fun for us.
Yay.
Longest outro ever. Wrap
Jesus.
It up.
Wrap Sorry. It up, man. I got hit the head.
Yep,
the con is closing in 5 minutes. The con is closing in 5 minutes.
Yeah. I'm
Thanks a lot, guys. We appreciate it. Thanks, guys, for hanging out, too.